I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. My name's Barry Cassidy, it's St. Patrick's Day, and unfortunately it's another one without the usual festivities. So instead of a parade or a trip to the local, I'll be bringing you the latest news from the farming world over the next half an hour or so. One positive has been the weather. The return of the sun has seen many animals return to the fields for grazing. Coming up on today's show, we have a preview of the Irish Farmers Journal Land Report and the launch of From the Tramlines for 2021. But first, Cavan's answer to CNN's John King, Adam Woods, is going to bring us the latest beef and sheep trade update. He was joined by Shane Murphy and Darren Carthy to see how both sides of the house are faring out this spring.
Okay, I'm delighted to be joined by Shane Murphy and Darren Carthy from the Irish Farmers Journal livestock team. Shane, I'll start with you. In terms of cattle trade and what you've been looking at over the last 2 weeks, but first of all, you're in Kanturk today. There's a calf sale on down there. What sort of trade are calves in the mart today?
Yeah, so down in Kanturk, we've got about 500 calves down here today. Small bit back on last year, maybe. But overall, beef calves are probably a tad back, but definitely with the shippers going from compared to last week, the Friesian calf is well up. Overall, a very good trade compared to any other year, though.
So there was some issues with ships moving. Did they get going at the weekend, and has that had a knock-on effect on the trade now?
Yeah, so got going at the weekend, and definitely you're talking about where it was hard to get 20, 30 euro for your Friesian calf last week. You're back up getting 50, 70 euro with trees.
And what is your three-week-old sort of Hereford or Angus, we'll say bull or heifer calf, making down there today?
Yeah, so again, buyers are definitely looking for a bit more age, so if you can get it up into that month, they're a lot happier with it. 3 weeks to 4 weeks old, with your heifers, Angus and Hereford, you're talking about 200 euro plus, and probably a small bit weighted in for the bulls. Obviously, your better types are coming up there to closer to 300 euro mark.
General cattle trade, Shane, you're taking a look at it in this week's paper, but you're seeing some improvements there, especially in heavy cattle, looking at the Marpids database over the last few weeks.
Yeah, so in this week's paper, we actually do a comparison with the first 2 weeks of March, comparing it to the first 2 weeks in March 2020 before the restrictions came in. And just looking at the heavy cattle, I suppose they're most affected. We're seeing demand from factory agents looking for heavy cattle with sellers not wanting to go direct to factory just while the prices increase. We can see a 14 cent and 13 cent per kilo increase on the year for steers and heifers. So like for a heavy animal of 700 kilos, you're talking about nearly 100 euro a head on the year, which is massive.
Finally, Shane, just with you, the work on the concerns, I know the Limousine Society held a sale in the West last weekend. The work on some concerns about the trade to the North and the trade to the UK, but those fears weren't warranted. You had a good export trade on the day.
Yeah, Limousine Society was the first of the premiers now to be held. A move to help Finn to try to get more of that trade from the Northern Ireland buyers, and it definitely paid dividends. There was 8 of the animals out of 37 sold on Saturday, went to Northern Ireland, a further 6 across the mainland. That would be a nice step up for the Northern Ireland buyers. So, there's still concerns with the 40 days going over to UK, the mainland UK, but the buyers still seem to be coming. So we'll hope it lasts for all the other breeds as well.
Okay, Darren, just to stay with cattle with you, I suppose there is some schemes maybe having an effect on, you know, the cattle trade at the moment. One of them is ANC and the other one is Beam. We're seeing a little bit of an effect there in March, especially in ANC, and you're seeing maybe some earlier purchases there in relation to the ANC scheme this year.
Yeah, definitely, Adam. I suppose, look, at this time last year, farmers are in uncertain territory with online bidding. Some held off buying. And as a result, had cattle, say, later into the year than what they might have had, and hadn't really the facilities, and ended up, I suppose, them cattle struggling to perform in the latter half of the year. We've also seen in recent years, despite what we say about prices being expensive, say, in March and April, the farmers that have generally bought early and sold early, them cattle have, I suppose, maybe covered themselves and left a bit of a margin. And if you take the payments on top of it, then that system has done quite well. And look at, if you put it against, I suppose, winter finishing, Adam, that system has excelled in recent years compared to winter finishing.
There is some talk out there, Darren, that Beam maybe is shifting some purchasers back to younger cattle, that they sort of have the nitrogen output in those 0 to 12 months rather than the 12 to 24 months. Are you seeing any of that in the West?
Yeah, definitely, Adam. You can see some of the market managers are saying that some of the buyers are really, I suppose, maybe picky on the ages and what has become, I suppose, maybe sought after in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And there isn't a huge amount of them out there. Is that sort of, I suppose, maybe weanling that's coming on, that's born after June or July, that they're not going to hit that sort of 1 to 2 year old age bracket until after the scheme. And that has a big impact, because if you look at an animal under 12 months of age is 24 kilos of say nitrogen annual output, and once that animal turns to 1 to 2 years, it's 57 kilos. There isn't the same jump up when it goes over 2 years, it's up to 65 kilos. So there is, I suppose, maybe a bit of appetite for them younger animals. But look at, as some art managers will say, Adam, that some people are holding off, but in general, I think there's just possibly less animals in the market at the moment, or we're maybe seeing slightly less, and that's creating a good flow under the trade and good competition, and is driving in prices the chains on about.
Moving on to the sheep, Darren, the talk of the town. I see a headline here in front of me: hogger prices remain strong, with prices up to 750 a kilo. Tell us where that's at this week, and is there more in it?
Yeah, Adam, sure. I suppose we've been talking about this the last few weeks on Tech Talks, and sort of seeing, where is it going to go? And the reality is, no one knows. Like, everyone thought it would have maybe settled at €7 a kilo 2 weeks ago. It shot up again over 2 weeks to 750. It is even past that. If you were to look at Elfin there on Monday night, there was a lot of sheep hit over 180 euros for, I suppose, maybe fleshed hoggets. We had a camera in Aston Rye on Monday. A lot of hoggets between 170 and 180. So record prices for that, all driven, Adam, by, I suppose, maybe supply and demand. We're seeing a lot of hoggets, your hoggets coming out of the system now at the moment, and a lot of them being killed. So there is quite a variation in price going on, the quality of them and flesh cover. But like, the price for this time of the year in unknown territory. And like, if you're to say, will it go up? I suppose the next 10 days, Adam, is going to be the main buying sort of ahead of the Easter trade. If it is going to go up, that's when it's going to happen. Like, and I'd be saying to anyone is, that if you do have sheep to sell, to target them, that definitely don't miss the boat in one of the best selling years that we've ever had.
And the three lads will have full coverage of mart and factory prices on everything from lambs to calves in this week's Irish Farmers Journal, so be sure to pick it up. But we're going to park livestock for the moment and head to the tillage fields. It's always a pleasure to hear Andy Doyle's thoughts on the sector, but it's equally fascinating to hear him pick the brains of others in the industry. He sat down with Seed Tech's Tim O'Donovan to do just that.
This is Andy Doyle from the Farmers Journal, and I'm joined on this podcast by Tim O'Donovan of Seed Tech. Seed Tech as a company is inextricably linked with the tillage industry in Ireland, and I'm curious to know how Tim and the company sees the future for tillage in Ireland. Tim, could you have a go at that answer, please?
Yeah, Andy, thanks very much for having us on the podcast. I see the future for tillage is very bright, Andy, to be honest, and the company as well. We're around a long time and we're dealing with all aspects of the arable industry, and our opinion is that the future is very bright at the moment, and certain things are coming together that really haven't come together in an awful long time, if ever before, for the tillage industry.
And Tim, do you mean by that the kind of the environmental pressures, the prices, or a combination of that and other things?
Well, look, yeah, I mean, the prices at the moment, the fallow prices, the current prices are extremely high, probably 8 or 9 years since we've had anything like it. But that's not the reason for us just to come out and say that we think the thing is positive. Where we're really coming from, what I'm really thinking of, Andy, or what I'm trying to get at is there's a number of things in the background. The environment is one, certainly. The policy that the government in Ireland, but also the European Union, are actually starting to put out there. And also then, I suppose, look, we have certainly demand from end users for our products. All those things together, I don't think in my 25 years as an advisor dealing with farmers, dealing with the industry, I don't think I've ever seen them coming together like they are at the moment.
So, Tim, you're suggesting that all of these things as they come together are giving more scope for confidence than we've seen in many of the day.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there has been false dawns before, and I'm sure, look, I would have thought, you know, maybe in 2007, when the prices rose high, that things were coming good. I mean, a lot of people remember 1995, we had a great harvest, and people said, God, things are not going to be as good again, or that. But I think at the moment, there's kind of bigger macro things happening, Andy, that are certainly helping us be a little bit more confident about the future. The whole environmental pressures that are on the world, you know, everyone's talking about carbon neutrality or reducing carbon. And I mean, tillage is probably the one sector of agriculture that's really going to help in that regard. And everybody, companies, from the person who's selling the bottles of spirits or the beer to milk on the shelf, they're all looking at how can they reduce carbon in the supply chain the whole way back along. And certainly tillage has an awful lot to offer there. I think then in terms of the policy, I mean, the European Union have been very vocal in what they're trying to do. They're talking about having a better health for citizens, health for the society, but also the environmental health. And they've come out with some very long-term documents. They have a Green Deal, which has been, you know, the main driver, the main thought process behind that. And they've come out with a farm to fork policy document, which really, in my opinion, it puts things in place that we should be really hopeful for and positive about the tillage.
And Tim, given all of those things in the background, then what way does seed tech see the future locally? What changes are we going to see? What initiatives do you think farmers should be considering at the moment? I know you've been involved with Roy for the last few years, and at the Tillage Conference this year, we had Roy mentioned, probably officially for the first time, but you've been at it a while longer. What are you doing with Roy? Will it work?
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, we're looking at all crops, Andy, that are going to help growers and the industry become a little bit more efficient. I mean, we're being asked to produce more from less. I mean, that's the way the population growth is. Consumption patterns of consumers is not going to change. And at the same time, the environmental pressures are going to be greater. So getting more from less is very important. And I mean, hybrid rye is certainly a crop that can do that. Hybrid barley can certainly do it. I mean, there's, you know, hopefully we'll have hybrid wheat within a few years. I mean, but all of those crops are designed to use inputs a lot more efficiently. I mean, you know, there's a couple of reports that have come out recently about gene editing. I saw a very interesting report from Bayer in the last couple of days where they talk about these short corn hybrids in America. And at the moment, Europe is kind of a little bit lagging behind. But I think as part of this Green Deal, the European Union is looking at gene editing in a more positive light. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see gene editing being allowed into the future in Europe, because we're not going to be able to produce this food without having tools at our disposal like that. But bringing us a little bit back towards home, I think, you know, the crops that we are looking at, I mean, what I find is I think people need to look maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years in advance with rotation, and looking at crops like beans, looking at crops like oilseed rape, those crops are going to be more and more useful to farmers and getting more out of all the fields across the rotation. And that sort of an idea is what's more important, I think, than just looking at a crop standing up on its own 2 feet, which it has to do. But certainly across the bigger rotation, I think that's where this is going to be won or lost, Andy, into the future.
And we'll have more from the tillage front in the second half of the show when I'm joined by Stephen Robb. But join me after the break when we'll get the inside scoop on land prices.
Land prices up 15%. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
The average price of farmland has increased to its highest level since the financial crash of 2008. In this week's Irish Farmer's Journal, we publish a 72-page guide to agricultural land prices across Ireland. We reveal why the average price of farmland is up and who's buying the land.
Don't miss your free land price report worth €15 inside this week's Irish Farmer's Journal. You cannot afford to miss it.
Hello and welcome back. In this week's Farmers Journal, we publish our detailed land report, which profiles property sales across the 32 counties of Ireland. What has COVID meant for the sale of land? Are prices on the up? And what can we expect in the months ahead? To answer those questions and more, I was joined by one of the people behind this year's report, Paul Mooney.
Paul, thanks very much for joining me on the show. I suppose it's an annual or biannual event, the land report, and it's waited eagerly, I think, by every farmer. Maybe if you just want to give us a general run-through of kind of your findings from a look back over the sales of land over the last year.
Barry, hi. Yes, the standout point, Barry, in the land report for 2020 was a big drop in the supply of farmland coming onto the market, a big drop in the number of farms, and a big drop in the number of acres put up for sale. The number of acres, Barry, fell by a whopping 25%. You'd nearly call it a collapse, really, down from the figure of the previous year, 2019. And that, yeah, was the key influence on what then happened, Barry. Demand for land more or less stayed the same. People, farmers, as hungry for land as they ever would be in any other year. So the result, Barry, was that prices then inevitably rose, and they went up by a very significant 15% in the previous year. So it's the first year in a number of years, Barry, where we've seen a bit of a jump in the numbers, because the market had been quite stable for the previous about 5 years in terms of the supply coming onto the market for sale and in terms of prices. Last year, we saw a jump.
Yeah, and I guess it's like any commodity, supply and demand, it's governed by that those rules. And if we think just a little bit behind why that was, are we talking here maybe COVID-19 effects or Brexit effects? Because they were obviously two big changes in the last 12 months.
Yes, Barry, absolutely. There was one standout factor, it goes without saying, which was the pandemic and COVID-19. No other influence, Barry, had really changed in the past, in 2020, on previous years. Yes, you would look at Brexit carefully, particularly with regard to counties up quite near Northern Ireland. But the standout influence, of course, was COVID-19. And in particular, Barry, it was the lockdown restrictions that were put in place to try and contain the virus. So what we would have been hearing, Barry, during 2020 was that landowners who wanted to sell land, who are thinking of selling in the market, they lost some confidence maybe that they would get the best price, you know, if they went ahead with the sale. They reckon they might get the good, you know, the best price in the market. And then there were other farmers who would have been afraid, for example, of the virus itself, and didn't want to be meeting people, didn't want viewers coming looking at their land or at their yard, farmhouse and yard, and who are nervous for those reasons, and who similarly decided to hold off and wait for the pandemic to end. And maybe the other related factor was just the sheer difficulty of organizing a sale, whether by auction or private treaty, given the lockdowns, given the restrictions that were in place. So that is the standout reason why supply of farms and supply of acres of farmland was down hugely in 2020.
Yeah, and then I suppose just before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball, Paul, and tell me what's going to happen with the land market in 2021, if you can.
It's a great question, Barry. I mean, I would think that there is a bit of pent-up demand by landowners who want to sell land because, you know, the generations move on, all that kind of thing, and farmland has to be bought and has to be sold. I would think there is some pent-up demand to sell farmland, but the restrictions are still in place, and there's no immediate sign of them being eased as we speak here now in the middle of March. So certainly in the first half of the year, Barry, first half of 2021, there is not going to be any dramatic jump in the supply of land becoming available, and maybe that will change in the second half of the year. We just don't know that far ahead. On the other side of the coin, then, about price in 2021, the year's got off to a strong start, Barry, in terms of price, and the sales that have taken place so far show price as having taken off where it ended. 2020 has taken off now in 2021, strong levels of prices there for the relatively small number of sales in the past number of weeks. So that gives a pointer that we could expect a strong demand in 2021, all else being equal. We'd have to be cautious about any increase in supply of land again.
And be sure to pick up this week's Irish Farmers Journal to see how the property market in your area fared over the last 12 months. Next, we'll be turning our attention to organics. It's a sector that the European Commission has been keen to push as part of its farm to fork strategy. Janine Kennedy has been taking a closer look at the sideline sector that looks set to take the main stage.
I'm joined by Janine here this morning. We're going to talk about Janine's series that she's written. You've written last week you wrote about the organic issue, which was a bit of a background, and we get to that in a minute. And this week you're talking about, is it worth it? Organic farming, is the conversion worth it to farmers? So Janine, just tell me, like, why are we having this conversation? What is this drive towards organics?
So as part of the EU's Farm to Fork strategy, by 2030, they want to have the total land farmed organically within the EU to 25%. In Ireland, that means currently the government wants to get our own land that's farmed organically up to 7.5 or 8%, which would be the EU current average. And they want to do it within the lifetime of this government. Now, that's really ambitious because currently we're at less than 2% of land being farmed organically.
Okay, so what kind of supports or encouragements are the government putting in place?
So basically, they've launched their 2021 organic scheme, and they've actually gotten more funding than they normally would for previous schemes. So they have €4 million in funding, which they hope will entice up to 500 new entrants into organic conversion. So that was launched on the 1st of March, and applications are open until the 30th of April. And so I guess we'll see after that to see how many new entrants we can expect.
So 500, that'd help, but it won't get us near that target though, will it?
No, and from the producers, from the processors that we've spoken to, they all consider it to be extremely ambitious to get to the EU current average, especially within the lifetime of the government, and also the demand. They don't see any end to the demand for organic product in Ireland just because we are at such low rates already. So the demand in the market apparently is increasing, but as it increases, we're more dependent on importing more organic product into the country because we aren't able to produce that at the current rates where we're operating.
So that's very disappointing. So if demand basically is outstripping supply of what we can produce. And what are the main, I know that you've spoken to a lot of farmers, either those who have converted or have been organic for a long time, what issues have they flagged to you in relation to the difficulties with going organic in Ireland?
Yeah, well, I've spoken to loads of organic farmers over the past several months, even before I was researching for this article. We'd speak to them, and some might have converted in the 90s, and then others might have converted within the last 5 years. But they all kind of said a similar thing, that they had a real lack of support understanding and knowledge coming from government bodies, you know, the likes of Tagus at the DAFM to an extent. And it's a little bit worrying when you consider the ambitious targets that we have for organic conversion now. If those supports aren't in place, I don't think we're going to be seeing as many farmers convert into organic systems.
So are those like they were problems previously, but are they sorted out under the new scheme?
Well, so far what I've seen is the increase in funding is going to help financially. That scheme is put in place for several reasons, but one of those reasons is to help farmers in conversion, because when you're in conversion, it takes several years, up to 3 years, and you can't say that your product is certified organic, and therefore you can't get that premium price for your product, even though maybe your cost per feed, for example, might be going up, and you might have problems associated with yield as you sort out your issues during the conversion process. You're not using fertilizer anymore, for example, so you need to sort out how your soil is going to maintain its health and the growth and the lower yields probably associated with that.
So the issue here is the discrepancy between what you lose in terms of production and yield versus the premium, and then there's this gap of time in the middle as well, and that's what the scheme is going to support.
Absolutely. So, but the problem with that is there's no actual proof that we've seen that anybody's going to be supporting farmers in terms of information and guidance and best practice when it comes to organic. There's been a real lack of research in organic farming. So in the last several years, there hasn't been any real updated research in the area of organic farming. And that lack of research isn't helping the situation, because we're trying to convince farmers that they need to convert to organics, and yet the data is not there to back it up. And it's a big step for a lot of farmers. You do need to support them in this decision. It's a big change for a lot of conventional farmers to be changing their entire system of farming. So having the access to that information and having access to the right support groups within your community, it's really, really important going forward.
And you can read more on Janine's series in last week's and this week's Irish Country Living. And last, but certainly not least, I'm joined by podcast regular Stephen Robb. Stephen has been spearheading the From the Tramline series for several years now, and it's back for 2021. I began by asking Stephen what farmers can expect from this year's iteration.
Thanks, Barry. Yeah, so a big week for the journal this week. From the Tramlines, Ireland's kind of leading tillage weekly series is back again this week. I suppose for anyone who doesn't know us, From the Tramlines is basically it is a weekly tillage series whereby we follow the progress of 12 tillage farmers from around the entire island of Ireland. Look, where I suppose the whole idea of From the Tramlines is that the Ireland's tillage scene, Ireland's tillage industry it's incredibly broad, a lot more broad than what people would think in terms of crops, in terms of soil, in terms of landscape, in terms of climate. So it's very hard to kind of capture that, you know, from a week-to-week basis in the paper. So the whole idea of From the Tramlines is we will get on the ground, in the field updates from growers around the country to pretty much tell us what's going on, to show us what they're doing, to tell us how crops are looking, to tell us what they're doing on the farm and why they're doing it type of thing. So kicks off with the introduction this week, Barry. We're introducing all 12 farmers. This year we have a really good spread of guys, a really good spread of farmers around the country. We have great Western representation. We have good growers from Kerry, from Galway, from Donegal and Derry, as well as the key kind of tillage areas along the eastern seaboard. You know, you have Leash, you have Wexford, you have down right down to Cork. So a really good spread of growers. And yeah, then this is the launch this week. You'll get introduced to all of the growers, and then from next week onwards, we'll get into the kind of proper rotation. So we'll be featuring three farmers every week on rotation. So it'll be a rotation every month, and that'll continue right throughout the growing season into the harvest and into the start of the following season and finish up around November time or so.
Yeah, no, I think anyone who is familiar with Tramlines will know, like, the series, you know, it's so much more than just that weekly page in the paper. I mean, you're out meeting these guys are filling you in, there's videos, there's podcasts, there's, you know, it's a very broad church series, it covers a lot. I guess maybe going ahead over the next 9 to 12 months while this is running, what are the big issues that tillage farmers will be facing, you know, 2021, obviously, coming off the back of Brexit and COVID and everything like that. You know, is there anything in particular people should watch out for?
Yeah, look, 2021 is going to be a fairly interesting year on the tillage scene. Look, if I'm being perfectly honest, I would be quite hopeful for the prospects of the tillage industry this year. Yes, we have our fair share of challenges. We have more chemistry set to go, and we're still kind of dealing and learning to deal with the loss of chemistry, chlorothalonil, diquat, and so on and so forth over the past couple of years. So growers' production systems as such is still, it's still adapting. You know, their agronomy programs and whatnot are still adapting. But, you know, for the first time in quite a while, grain markets are looking quite positive, and please God, it holds until harvest time and beyond. Straw chopping scheme is going to be a really interesting one this year. We're still waiting on, I suppose, confirmation and the final details and so on and so forth. But there's a lot of optimism, so there is a lot of excitement at grower level about this scheme. So it's going to be interesting to see what the 12 guys, the 12 farmers are going to do, and whether they're going to opt in or opt out. And then, of course, with tillage, we're particularly dependent on the weather. So this year, similar to 2019, we've teamed up with Sencrop, who is a French-based weather station manufacturer. And we're going to get 24 weather stations onto the 12 farms. So we're actually going to get live weather data from these 12 locations and feed it into our weekly coverage, and also feed it into our Farmers Journal live weather page. So it's really exciting to have Sencrop on board as a partner again, along with Corteva and Gouldings. And we're getting this weather data directly from the fields as such.
Yeah, I mean, even in that broad church that you touched on, I don't think you even mentioned cap reform and what that might mean for tillage farmers. But look, the series is launching this week. It'll be on the pages in the tillage section this week for everyone to go and take a look at. But for now, Stephen, thanks very much for joining me.
Barry, thank you.
And the full profiles of all 12 farmers in the series will be on this week's tillage pages. But that's all we have time for this week. A big thank you to all my colleagues and our contributors who made time for us during the bank holiday. And a very special thank you to my sound editor, Claire Nash, as well. Hannah Quinn Mulligan will be back in the hot seat next week. So until next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.